And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays podcast. My name is Zach. His name is Pat. And what a great bounce back week after a slightly embarrassing four-game sweep by the Red Sox over the Rays. What a bounce back this week has been.
Yeah, huge, huge bounce back. A 5-1 week, potentially to go 6-1 if they can win the early afternoon game against the Guardians and sweep them. The Rays are pretty good at sweeping people this year as well, it feels like. They're good at smelling blood and taking all three games. Yeah, really good week. It looks way more familiar to what we've seen all season as opposed to what we saw in the Red Sox series, where me and Carter last week didn't really want to talk about it that much. but we basically, the defense was all over the place. At the worst moments, the pitching would fall apart. There were times where the lineup just looked lethargic. It just looked like we weren't running. We weren't bunting. It was just a weird... The Rays have done this a couple times this year, where they'll have like a week or so where they get away from what has made them good, where they stop running or they stop playing good defense, or they like just start striking out a bunch and like swinging for the fences. And all of a sudden, like the results fall off. And then with, like, I think the Blue Jays series was a great example of this, and we'll talk about it today. As soon as they start running, playing small ball, kind of being that pesky, like thorn in your side team, the results suddenly turn back up again.
Yeah. And, you know, we can give them a bit of a pass. It's all right after All-Star Week. The first day of games for them was a doubleheader that was not originally scheduled that way. It was a makeup game from a previous day. It's on the road in Fenway. It's just a lot of factors, like going right off the, like, think about it. You know, those folks who were at the All-Star game were several days on, were like quite a while on the road, where they then are going again on the road to Boston. It was a lot of factors in there, and it would have been nice to find a way to steal one of those games. And I think that was kind of the part that was the most frustrating to me. Like, I really thought that second game of the doubleheader, I thought we were going to pull it out, and we just didn't. And then we really had chances in the game on, I think it was Saturday, had real chances to win that game as well. I just couldn't figure out a way to do it. And I think that was kind of the part that was a bummer. And it was also why I never panicked that badly. Like, yeah, we got dog walked in the first game, but like the other, you know, the final game of the series was also, you know, fairly decisive for the Red Sox, but the middle two were very much in the balance, where I thought the Rays, if they got a couple breaks one way or the other, could have found a way to win. They just didn't. And so I never was overly concerned. And so they have immediately proven us right that, you know, it was just sort of an unfortunate series of games by going on the run they went on this last week.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think we would have all felt way better if Garrett Clevenger like just made one better pitch on that Saturday game, because that was the difference with the Abreu home run. I think it was Englert that was the deciding factor in the second Friday game, which is a guy that we don't want to depend on in the playoffs anyway. But I was just like, oh gosh. The only sad thing about it is we've given the Red Sox kind of, and it wasn't just us, it was everyone they faced for the past 3 weeks, but we've given the Red Sox an avenue back into playoff baseball. And the thing that scares me the most is potentially facing the Red Sox in a playoff series at Fenway. I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, they can pitch. It's despite their recent trade of starting pitching, they can pitch. And so facing them in a playoff series certainly would not be ideal. Now, I would say that the Rays can pitch too. So I think it would be a fun series if we got there. And we'd probably be playing it at home as well. So we'll see. A lot of ifs, ands, and buts. But one thing that I'm sure about is that we're here to talk Rays baseball, and that we are glad that all of you that are joining us are here to talk baseball with us. If it's your first time joining us, do us a huge favor and drop a follow or a subscribe on the platform you're enjoying the show on. If you want to be a part of the show, drop a comment over on YouTube if you've got some thoughts on whatever we're talking about. We're going to break down the week that was in Rays baseball. We're going to talk a little trade deadline stuff, because it's coming up very, very soon. And next Monday is the trade deadline, so there's a lot that can happen between now and then. I mean, even between now and when the next time we do a show, there could be, you know, moves could happen early. The Rays like to act early. We've seen that in previous years. So we're going to talk about all that. We appreciate all of you being here, and we're going to jump right into the beginning of the first series of this week, which was against the Blue Jays. And this was when I kind of saw this series beginning after we had just had such a rough time with the Red Sox, I was a part of me was like, is this an opportunity for something worse to go on? Because we're on the road here and we generally play well in Toronto, but like, you know, we're on the road here against a team that is fighting for its life. They're on their last legs trying to stay alive in this season, bunch of games under 500. And I thought, maybe is there a potential for us to be in some trouble here? And Nick Martinez put that to bed almost immediately.
Yeah. I mean, what a game for him. He really set the tone really early, I would say. Gave up that one run in the fourth, but other than that, he was pretty much lights out. Especially when he like needed to, it wasn't like he was perfect. He was giving up the odd single here and there. Like he wasn't like pitching 1-2-3 innings all the time, but he never let them get close. And it never felt like we were in any trouble. That's the thing about Nick Martinez starts this season, is that I've always felt safe. I've never felt like, oh no, things are going to unravel with him. Like even when he gives up a leadoff double or whatever, I'm kind of like, he'll figure it out. And that's just a calm veteran presence, I think, of Martinez. He's been through it. But I think what was more impressive is I don't think the offense did very well in Fenway. But we really got to Dylan Cease, I thought, who is in the mix for the Cy Young contention, started the All-Star game. And we got to him, and I want to give a shout out, especially to Victor Mesa, who at that point had homered in his third straight game. And we've all been clamoring for Melton to be coming up as soon as possible to kind of give a little spark to the offense. But Victor Mesa said, we don't need him. We've got the spark plug corner outfielder at home, and it's me. And he has been low-key one of the Rays' better players over the past month. He's hitting to like a – when I think it was at the end of the Jays series, he was on like a 120 WRC plus for the season and was on like a 4-war pace for per 162. Like if you – that's like good Josh Lowe. By the way, that's like what all-star Josh Lowe was kind of doing, like a 120 to 130 WRC plus, 4 wins, solid defense, cannon of an arm on Mesa, by the way. And now you're like, hold on, maybe we don't need to send any outfielders down and call Melton up. I don't know how you feel about Mesa and the outfield situation, but I felt like this was the time to talk about it.
I'm glad that you brought it up because I was going to talk to you about it, because I think that it is a very interesting situation that has occurred, because as we were looking at the trade deadline, outfield is one of the positions where we said, you know, maybe it's going to be okay. Maybe, you know, maybe they can sort of make it happen with what they have put together right now. But it's also a position where we could definitely see an addition. And let me just read you Victor Mesa's stat line so far this season. He's played in 40 games, only 127 plate appearances, 8 home runs. He's hitting to a 781 OPS and a 116 WRC plus on a 0.9 F4 so far this season, positive in both offense and defense on Fangraphs. So an above average defender, currently above average offensively out there. He is, you know, it hits the profile that, you know, we've seen, you know, over time with Rays outfielders where they're going to strike out a good bit. He strikes out 24% of the time. That's roughly in line with what he's done at previous levels, at this skill level, and he's walking about 11% of the time. He's not going to walk a whole bunch. He's going to strike out a decent amount, but he does walk enough to make it, you know, where his on base percentage isn't awful. But he's just going to hit the ball really hard. He has real power in that bat. 464 slug for him on the season, which is nothing to sneeze at all. That's a real that's a strong number right there. And the 116 WRC plus on top of really good defense. I think the question that I want to ask, and you kind of asked it to me, but I'll kind of throw it right back to you, Pat, with those stats in mind, is do you think that Mesa has ended the discussion of going for an outfielder at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think for now, I think you go, okay, I'm kind of happy with the group that we have. And then Melton's there in case of injury or fall off.
Yeah.
I think second base and catcher are the two positions that you could improve offensively. And we don't want to bite off more than we can chew. Apparently Curtis Mead is worth one of your top pitching prospects, who has had a good year. Don't get me wrong, but like, I'm so used to watching Curtis Mead not be very good that I'm like, I don't know if I would have done that trade. So if we're going to go acquire bats, I think we can't acquire three.
Yeah.
So let's focus on the places of real need, which are second base and catcher. Outfield, it's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, when you think about Mead in particular, it's such an interesting one. And it's such an interesting that is the first trade that has gone off. You know, we were talking about a little bit before the show. I'm of the opinion that trade is a very specifically, the Red Sox have great pitching. The offense has firepower, but with Roman Anthony and, the shortstop of that, Marcelo Meyer. Both of them have not been at the major league level and performed the way they wanted to. And they were intended to be a part of their lineup. And because of that, Christian Campbell too. They just not really been doing what they were supposed to be doing. And so I think they said, we have to make a move and find something that we can slot in right away. And, you know, I give Curtis Mead a ton of credit. He struggled in a Rays uniform, but he's hitting to a 134 WRC plus right now with Washington, 17 bombs.
Not fielding at all.
I think we could have seen that one coming. we always knew that, you know, the glove was decent, the arm was not. And I think that is, you know, it is when the arm's not there, I think that the rest of the game sort of by necessity has to speed up and can result in some misplays. I haven't watched a ton of Curtis Mead, so maybe I'm just totally wrong on that. But if I was, that would be my guess of what might be.
I mean, the Red Sox are more likely to put him at second base, I think, than third base. I think Caleb Durbin does quite well fielding out there. So I think he'll be more of a second baseman. Yeah, so he can just hit, and the arm's not as much of an issue there.
Yeah.
But it still feels like a lot for a guy that's like, showing his first signs of a breakout over what, 4 months of baseball. It's a lot to pay for a guy that's had a longer track record, arguably, of not really performing. I mean, we've wanted Curtis Mead to work for a long time. Yeah. So maybe he is, and we talked about why he could work. So maybe it is real, but it's set a tone, I think, for the market.
Yeah.
Which I think the Rays have the firepower to go get anyone, I think, if they want to, but they can't get everyone.
No,
they can get anyone, can't get everyone.
They've done a really good job in bolstering the farm system over the past two or three seasons. They had a great draft, I think, by all accounts. They spent a lot of money on their draft class as well. Keep an eye on that. That's something that one of the nuances of the MLB draft relative to some other major league sports drafts is you have a certain amount of money that is allotted to you to pay your draft picks. If you pay more than you're supposed to pay, you could lose a first round draft pick the next year. And the way that it's looking right now, there's a real chance that the Rays do not have a first round draft pick next year. Now that what that may signal is that the Rays are saying, we believe we're going to be picking really high or really like far up in the draft next year. Like, we don't think we're going to be getting the first pick. We think we're going to be getting the 31st or 32nd pick next year. Like, that's how well we feel about this team. And, you know, if that's the case, then great. But they've set themselves up with a very strong farm, a lot to work with there. So I don't think the excuse of we didn't have the firepower, like you're saying, Pat, is going to ring true for anybody out there. We have the prospect capital to make it happen. We could, if we had to part with a major league type guy, you know, whether it was a pitcher or a bat, if it was the right move, we could make it happen. We have depth at least a little bit on some of those positions. Any trade that you could imagine, the Rays could be in there.
Yeah, 100%. But I'm glad Mace has kind of solved one of the shopping list problems. Because I think 2 months ago, we were like, we need an outfielder. And now we're nowhere near as set on that, which is great. So well done, Victor Mesa, for kind of putting it together. He swings the bat really hard. Actually, he's in the kind of top 25% of bat speed, and he does barrel the ball with good quantity. I think like you said, he walks enough, probably strikes out a little bit too much, but like, he reminds me a little bit of like a watered down Jose Siri, in terms of the skill set. Like not quite as raw power, not quite as much speed, but still a solid defender, cannon of an arm, runs fast enough, strikes out a bit less, hits the ball slightly less hard. He's like, he's a slightly more moderated version of Jose Siri.
Yeah, and look, since Victor Mesa has been kind of a sort of an everyday type player, which is kind of at the beginning of June where he really started to see a lot of play, the dude has hit to a 118 WRC plus. So he has been, when he's been given the opportunity, he has it's kind of what we criticize Curtis Meade for, just to go back to that comparison. When he had the opportunities, he never seemed to be able to make it happen. And that's not what, and Victor Mesa has seized the opportunity. Yeah. So we'll see.
More relevantly, someone like Chris Morrell, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. Had so much runtime to try and put something together and never quite did it. Maybe it was the Messi effect. Maybe the Messi effect rubbed off on Victor Mesa.
It's funny how, and again, we talk about this so much with baseball. It's a mentality thing. Like, we joke about it, but who knows? Like, what those sorts of things, how that affects your mentality, how it gets you in the right headspace. And, you know, it seems like there's been a lot of discussion around the vibes of the clubhouse and the morale of the team being really strong. How does that affect a new up and comer coming into a situation where maybe it does feel a little bit more welcoming? Maybe it does feel like a little bit more, you know, pulling together as a team. And it certainly helps that you're winning. But I mean, the reality is that Victor Mesa has been a part of the winning. He has been a significant reason why the Rays have won games over his time with the team. And I did not expect to be saying that when this season began, but here we are. And so I'm with you. I think that outfield is no longer on my list of things that need to, you know, be made right with this trade deadline. But what I do think it does, and we'll get into this more as we, you know, after we wrap up the game breakdowns, it really puts a microscope to me on the positions where we do need to upgrade. And I think that those positions, even now, more so than ever, are even more important to fix, because one of our primary concern areas has kind of been rectified. So now there's really no excuse to not go fix the area where we have concern. So, 100%. Yeah. So the good news for the Rays, though, is that if there was ever a concern of like, well, maybe if the Rays go on a losing streak, maybe Eric decides to pull on the reins a little bit. That second game in the Blue Jay series was a strong case in the other direction, with a 12-2 domination coast to coast. Got to Gausman early and then again, and it was never in doubt from jump.
Yeah. I mean, struck early, scored three in the first, and then, I mean, Johnny DeLuca was a big hit, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, Johnny DeLuca quietly having a good season when he plays. Yes. Not playing as much as maybe we expected coming into the season. Maybe that's because he's on the short side of the platoon. But when he does play, really solid. But yeah, we got to Gausman a lot. We really got to Gausman. I don't think there's been times where Gausman's looked really dominant against us. Didn't have it. And we got to him early and often. Really strong outing for the offense, really. But Drew was also just quietly going about his business like he always has as well. I mean, Drew has been great. I think he's been not quite as dominant in the past month or so. His past like four or five starts, he's not been quite as lights out. He has been like gettable, but quietly put together a five innings, two and run start, like great. But what I really liked is the names that kind of were the catalyst for this offensive explosion. Nick Fortes, Chandler Simpson, Johnny DeLuca, like those were the main guys. Yandy chipped in with a garbage time home run at the end. It was the main chunk of that game. It was Nick Fortes, Johnny DeLuca, Chandler Simpson, Cedric Mullins. Like it was the guys that are the supplementary pieces to that lineup chipping in that reminds you that like it's not just the three-headed monster. Because I would even say the three-headed monster has been quite quiet this week.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, and again, you could say, well, maybe is there a hangover from the All-Star break, that sort of thing. that maybe you could say that for Yandy. Junior's been okay. He hasn't been like he's been pretty good. Like he hasn't been quite as unreal as he was. He hasn't hit a home run since the All-Star break, which is sort of like a not a huge deal, but it's like a that's not true.
He was close yesterday.
I think he actually did hit one in the Boston series. Maybe I'm misremembering that.
I think he did. He didn't hit one last week, is what I was trying to say. And Aranda's been particularly quiet.
That's kind of what I was getting at, was where the, I was very long-windedly getting to, is that Aranda's been bad. And, like, not just, like, below his standards, he hit to a 23 WRC plus this week. And he started every game, so there's not a lot of excuses there. I mean, he was out there. Like, it wasn't like, oh, a small sample. He's in a slump. And I don't really know. I'm not in a situation right now where I'm, like, panicking. But I think the thing that is a little concerning is that it's not so much that he's just getting BABIPped. Like, he's striking out 40% of the time. That is, like, him feeding into his worst. The worst part of his game is that, despite the fact that he has a really good hit tool, dude strikes out quite a bit. And we are seeing the worst version of that right now. So, are you nervous? I don't think I'm worried about Yandy or Junior at all. And Junior did have a pretty good week last week. But, are you worried at all about Aranda?
Not really. I think it sucks that he's really he does look off it a little bit. I think the All-Star break actually messed with his timing a little bit because he just took a week off and is now, I think, struggling to get back up to game speed. He's taking the day off today, which I think is fair against a lefty. And I think that's right. Just get your head straight when you're in a slump and take the day off. Come back tomorrow against Quantrill. I think he'll be fine. I think he's proven he's a good enough hitter. It's still only his second kind of full season in the big leagues. Sophomore slumps exist. And it's only been a week. I think once we get to like 2-3 weeks of this, then I think it's a real concern. But I think almost every hitter in every team is going to go through a bit of a slump like this at some point. So I'm just going to hold on. If we're still talking about it this time next week, my concern is going to be higher. But for now, nah, I'm not too fussed.
One guy that I had started to have like very like I've been sort of like up and down in my level of concern for Griffin Jacks as a starter over the course of the season. The third game of the Blue Jays series was a game where I was not concerned about him because he had a great outing and led the way in an effort where we held the Blue Jays to only two runs. And that was good because we only scored four, but we didn't need to score more than three because the battery of Jacks and Boozer gave up the only two runs of the game, and Kelly and Baker took care of the rest.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly and Baker could really shorten a game, for sure. That like, a game's only seven innings when those guys are available. Yeah. But I thought, hey, Jacks probably just looked over to the... At the end of the first inning, Jacks probably just looked over to the Blue Jays dugout and said, you should have killed me while you had the chance.
Correct.
Because they really had him in trouble. They had him on the ropes in that first inning. But he managed to get out of it with only the one run scoring, and it wasn't even on a base hit, by the way. So once he got out of that, it was pretty smooth sailing from that point onwards. I think he only gave up like one hit after the first inning or something like that. Yeah, he looks really strong. And yeah, I'm really happy with Griffin Jacks as our fourth starter.
Yeah.
I think he's really come on a long way as a starter. I think he looks way better as a starter than he does a reliever.
For the Rays, he's looked much better as a starter.
He is the newest member of the mid reliever to dominant starter pipeline that seems to be so successful. That factory for the Rays is just unbelievable. I can't wait to find out who it is next because Littell, Jacks, Springs, even Rasmussen was a reliever when we acquired him. Like, it's just what a track record. If I just name the Rays' tenures of those guys, of Rasmussen, Springs, Littell, and now Jacks as starters, what unbelievable return for what were, when we acquired them, kind of middle of the road, even DFA-able relievers.
Yeah. And like, it's truly, is this Kyle Snyder's like masterwork? Is this ability to find these guys with the help of the scouting team, bring them in, find a way to turn them around into these upper tier back end of the rotation starters? And like, listen, these guys like that go for, we just saw like, I mean, he's very young, obviously, but like a pitcher of like Jax's type of caliber go for a 130 WRC plus hitter. Like that, that's real value in what the Rays have been able to create there. And it's been unbelievably valuable when you also consider the loss of Pepio and the fact that Joe Boyle has not figured it out. Like, just like those two guys were supposed to be starters for this team this year, and they are both not worked out. And being able to slot Jax in there has really, it could have been something that torpedoed the pitching staff for the entire season. But because they were able to make this happen with Jax, they've been able to stave off that concern. And so just really, really impressive stuff from the pitching department, whether it was Jax himself being able to make that adjustment or the coaching staff coaching him along, getting him there. Just really, really impressive stuff. On the offensive side, it was kind of the Victor Mesa show. Again, two RBIs from him on two singles in key moments. Simpson had a sack fly. Ben Williamson pitched in with a pinch hit RBI. Not a game that's going to, like, you know, just like make your heart flutter with excitement from as far as like big power or anything like that, but just timely hitting, guys taking their walks when the opportunities came, getting on base, and, you know, a gritty win.
Yeah, a gritty win and good pitching. Good pitching, yeah. Can get you, like, good pitching will always get you so many wins. You'll win far more games from your pitching being good than your offense being good.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was true again today.
It was true there. And we saw kind of the other side of that coin in the last game of the Blue Jays series when we got Shane Bieber for seven innings, and kind of ended our hopes of finding a way to get a sweep. Although I will say, like, you know, a 3-1 loss is not like a crazy loss to have. Offense just didn't really have it. But I'm going to give credit to Legumina and Seymour for going out there, and the two of them were all that the Rays needed to get through eight innings of pitching. And they only gave up the three runs. So like, I'm not going to kill them for that.
No, they kept us in the game 100%. I thought our offense was abysmal on Sunday. But also, I think the Blue Jays played some really good defense. I mean, like, the Blue Jays, in theory, should be a really good fielding team, but we didn't really see that over the week. But in this game, on the Thursday game, they really played some good defense. Vladdy made a nice play. Varsho made a couple of nice plays. Yeah, it like, they were robbed on a couple of big hits. At that point, and also I did see some really pitiful at-bats, especially from Aranda and Caminero. I thought were particularly bad that day. I think on the last out of the game, Caminero just, like, swung at three straight pitches way out of the zone. He was like, I just want to go home, man, just get me back to the Trop. So I was like, fine, if you really don't want to win this game, let's go home then. But I was kind of like, gosh, I wish we put up a little bit more fight. I think they were just like, listen, we're happy with three out of four. If we don't get the fourth, whatever, man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it is a long season. You know, it's, you want to win every single game, and you want to win division games too. But a four-game series where you win three, you can't really be too upset about it. I just appreciate that in a game like that, we only had to use two pitchers. Because that's one of those where, in a close game like that, if you end up having to use your A bullpen because you want to stay in it, that's a real bummer. And Cash seems to find a way to, like, maybe it's like it's just part of knowing the pulse of the team. He knows when it's worth it to use the A guys, and when it's like, you know what, I think we're just gonna ride it out with Seymour and see if we luck into some, you know, home run here or there. Like, Junior's always a threat to launch. Who knows? And so, like, if we luck into something, that's great. But we'll be okay if we get out of here with a suboptimal end to the series, but a series win nonetheless.
Yeah, 100%. I'm really happy with how that went. I remember, I think Ryan Bass was commenting, saying that the team felt pretty down on themselves coming out of Boston. Yeah. But they apparently, immediately as soon as they landed in Toronto, all went out to dinner together and would, like, Instead of being like, right, let's all get some rest, let's just all like move to ourselves a bit. They were like, no, we're going to stick together. We're going to kind of raise the camaraderie of the team. They said these were the times where we need to do these kind of things, not when we're winning, but when we're losing. And a lot has been made of team chemistry this year compared to maybe the past couple of seasons for the Rays, saying that it's really tight-knit. And honestly, the best Rays teams often have this kind of reputation of being really together.
Yeah.
And I think we've said it on the pod before. You will win probably between 2 and 5 extra games, I think, in a season just on having good vibes. There is no science to that. There is no statistical data to that. But I think chemistry will give you plus minus up to 5 wins in a season. And if you've got great chemistry, you're going to win some. And I think this Blue Jays series was a test of the chemistry where things could have really spiraled. But yeah, suddenly we're winning because we didn't let it get to us and just got back on the horse, back to how we should be playing baseball, what this team's supposed to be. And yeah, great, great result.
If you think about like some other sports, there's just less games to play. So if the chemistry is not perfect, you really only got to see those guys, like, especially like some other sports, it's bigger rosters, or you're not, you may not, like if you're playing American football, you may not interact with your starting corner that much if you're a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman. Like you just may not, like it just may not be something where like, you know, him and you see him, but like, if you don't get along, you can kind of steer clear of each other and be all right. You're all in that dugout. So if you don't get along, you're stuck with those guys. Like, and you're going to see
every day.
Every day. So like it and in baseball is such a game of mentality too. When you add, like, there's enough things to be worried about with like with pitchers, with fielding, with your own approach at the plate. If you're a pitcher, it's with your approach to hitters, with your grip, your arm, stamina. There's all that to worry about. If you're also like trying to avoid, you know, the shortstop because y'all don't get along. Like, that's just, it's just not like on a daily basis, that grinds you down a little bit faster, I think, if you have bad chemistry. So I 100% agree with you on that. And it's also just, it's fun to see the dugout as a fan, to see the dugout really be cheering for each other and excited for each other. And, you know, there was a lot to be excited for the first game of the Guardians series because we won 11-3. And got a lot of contributions from a lot of different guys, but almost all of the big contributions came outside of the top four of the lineup, with nobody in the top four driving in a run in a game where you scored 11, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, Nick Fortes played a big part in that. Johnny DeLuca played a big part in that. Valade. I mean, we love Ryan Valade. We're a Ryan Valade fan cast here.
Yes.
But even Richie Palacios chimed in. Richie Palacios hitting home runs is my favorite genre because he looks like he put every inch of everything into that swing, and he's off balance after he's hit it, always. Like, he has to put every inch of his body behind a home run. So when he hits a home run, you're like, wow, he really put everything behind it. Is he good enough to be like the everyday second baseman of the team? I don't know. That's probably a discussion for when we talk about trade deadline needs. But you really pitched in here today. Nick Fortes cemented him being catcher numero uno. But yeah, and also like Shane McClanahan quietly going about his business, once again, looking pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, Shane has had an interesting season, and it does seem like there has been a significant effort by the Rays coaching staff to limit both his innings and, you know, the number of times that he is, you know, pitching it like 5 days, you know, straight. Like, they're trying to find ways to get him an extra day here or an extra day there to get him a little bit more rest. They've been willing to skip a start or bump him back a little bit. So there's a lot of cognizance around managing his workload. But on the flip side, he's pitching to a 3.09 ERA on the season so far. He has been he's a great guy to have, I think, once you get to the postseason, because he's one of the few Rays that was around during the last postseason run that the Rays had. And so there's just not that many guys left that were around from that period of time. And so having him there, you know, along with Yandy, I think is important as we get to a postseason because they do have some experience. I also think Shane in particular has some postseason demons that I think he's going to want to chase after if we do make it there. So I think his season is a very interesting one for me to watch personally as a fan to see how he is managing to get through it and to see if he can have enough gas to go and maybe right some wrongs of previous seasons when he gets to the postseason. But it was a good start from him, and it's just another brick in the wall that he is building of this season.
Yeah, a really solid season. But the key, yeah, like you said, the key thing for McClanahan is just making sure he's ready to go and not completely worn out by the time October rolls around. Because we're now in a spot, and it's almost weird to be in this spot because it's been a while. Probably 2023 was the last time we were in this spot where we're pretty sure we're going to make the playoffs in some form or another. Like, yeah. It would be a real shocking collapse to not be in the playoffs at this stage. I think Fangraphs has a like 98% playoff odds. So now we're almost at a point where we're like, right, we just need to make sure, like, it would be nice to win the division, skip that wildcard series for sure. And I think that's going to be motivation for the team. But otherwise, it's like, especially September, assuming we play solidly in August, it will be mostly about setting up everything so that everything is in order and everyone's healthy and everyone's like got enough in them for October. And that's especially important for our rotation, because we even talked about it before we thought we were going to be in a playoff race in spring training, where we were like, okay, how are we going to handle Shane McClanahan, Drew Rasmussen, guys like that, where we don't think they've got 200 innings in them. How are we going to manage that? And that's even more important knowing we got playoff games to play at the end of the year. And I would not be surprised if we go out and acquire a starting pitcher and both of those guys take a couple weeks off between now and the end of the season. Where, ow, my elbow's a little sore, or ow, my ankle's a little sore. I've got a blister on my finger,
Was it a spider bite that Tyler had that one season?
Yeah. Or, you know, the classic shoulder fatigue. I think those guys are going to have a couple weeks off pretty soon to make sure, and then give them like 2-3 starts in September to get back into the swing of things. And that's going to be the most important thing now, more than anything, is making sure these guys have the bullets. Cause I was not sure, and I'm sure you're the same, about how good McClanahan was going to be after missing some of the 2023 season and then all of 2024 and 2025. Is he going to be, and is he a Cy Young contender? No. But is he a really effective starting pitcher that's like absolutely a 2 or 3 in any rotation? Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, and you know, preseason, I remember us talking about the projections being that Shane was going to be our best starter. And I think we both said that is something where people are just looking at the last season that Shane pitched fully and saying, he's just going to magically be that exact same guy and bring that into 2026. And we both said we love Shane, but we don't think he's going to be that guy yet. Now, next season, could he be that guy? Absolutely, he could be that guy next season. It could totally happen. But we knew that this season was always going to be a season of working back into a normal workload and being, you know, trying to just be there all season long one way or another, whether he takes a sabbatical here and there or whatever they decide to do to handle that low innings limits during games, like all that sort of stuff. And so this season, I don't know that I could have scripted it any better so far from my expectations of him. So I'm really, really happy with it. And I was really happy with the last game that the Rays have finished as the Rays are just kicking off. Maybe the wrong term. What's the first pitch has just been thrown for the Rays game today on Peacock. If you have that streaming service, go ahead and cue that up. Maybe in another box.
Not available in the UK, by the way.
Which is not cool.
And they won't let me MLB TV it.
That's so weird. That's a whole other conversation. But Nick Martinez ended the conversation around the Guardians getting any runs yesterday with a second in this week. Excellent start where he goes six innings, no runs given up, five strikeouts.
Hey, love that. I'll take that any day of the week. I mean, I don't know what more there is to say about Nick Martinez other than he's just been excellent and like been the safest pair of hands at all times. I don't know what more there is to say. I think he's been of huge benefit to the team, mainly because of his veteran kind of calmness. But yeah, just an unbelievable pickup that we were all scared about when we picked him up at spring training. But he's been great. He's been absolutely outstanding. And we kind of thought, worst comes to the worst, we'll just, you know, we'll ship him off at the deadline if we're not doing well or whatever. But we absolutely need to keep this guy now.
Yeah, and he, you know, there's a strong argument right now, you know, with Drew having a bit of a rough stretch, uncharacteristically for him, that Nick Martinez is the best pitcher on the staff. I mean, like, it's a conversation worth having. And, you know, we'll see how today's game goes. Drew is pitching today. I'm sure he's going to find a way to have a great start today. I believe he did give up a double to begin the game, which is suboptimal.
Yeah, Kwan doubled, but then Jose Ramirez is flown out. DeLauda's just struck out. So yeah, it's man on second, two outs now for Rocchio.
Okay. That's not the worst outcome ever. And, you know, the Rays offense didn't have a lot of juice yesterday, but it was nice to see the top of the lineup kind of get back on the horse. You know, in the fifth inning, we had a Diaz double and a Ronda single and then a Junior double. A little bit more of what we're used to seeing, you know, offensively, and then Mullins with a sac fly to get two runs, which was all the runs that the Rays needed to win the game. And so it was nice to see those folks kind of getting back in the swing of things. And hopefully they can, you know, hopefully Aranda in particular can carry this, whatever he found in his one single yesterday forward into the rest of, you know, this season, because he needs to find a way to get out of this slump that he's in.
100%. Fingers crossed that happens. It was good to see the three-headed monster kind of do the damage. Fiducia also got an RBI. Congratulations.
RBI bunt. Nice bunt. Yeah, I said about it. It was a nice bunt. It was good.
It's a nice bunt. It's a nice bunt. And yeah, the main thing was the pitching. Even Salsa, Clevinger, Baker also did a great job at the pen as well. So yeah.
Salsa, by the way, I want to shout out Salsa. Salsa had a nice week this last week. Not a guy that we talk about a whole lot in positive terms, but listen, he went out there for four innings over this past week, didn't give up a run.
Aggregate, he's been like a completely serviceable mid-leverage reliever, turns out.
Yeah.
Like, he's not been lights out, but he's been completely serviceable and has pitched a lot of innings for us, I would say.
And he seems to find himself in the game in like inopportune times, because he's generally the guy that, oh, hey, this isn't working out. This game is not going to go the way we want it to. Hop on out there, Sulcer, is normally what happens. And, you know, that's not maybe – I don't know that that's really anybody's, like, dream role when they're growing up in their backyard, that they're going to be the bulk reliever when you're getting blown out. I don't think that's anybody's dream. But the reality is it's a very, like, important role for any major league team, because those innings have to be pitched by somebody. And Sulcer has been good at that role and has earned a spot on the team.
Yeah, and you know what? He, apart from Kevin Kelly, he's been our most used reliever.
Yeah,
He's pitched a lot, and he's also got the third highest WAR amongst relievers after Baker and Kelly. And you know what? His FIP suggests that he's pitching better than his results have allowed as well. So, shout out Salsa. You're doing a great job. I've never championed you, and I'm sorry for that. You have been completely fine this year, and I'm sorry for thinking you were going to get DFA'd all the way through the offseason. That's my mistake, and you can clown on me for that.
Yeah, listen, I can't remember the number, but there's a rough number of innings that you have to get through every season. And right now, Sulcer has accounted for almost 47 of them, and that is not nothing. That is not nothing. Mm-hmm. And so good stuff. So that leads us into where we sit now. Drew did get out of that jam, so good job, Drew. Bottom of the first now. And we sit here with an opportunity to sweep the Guardians, but we also sit here 8 days from the trade deadline with no moves made yet. The Red Sox and the Nationals have done really the only sort of trade deadline trade so far this season. And pretty big news this morning that Shea Longoliers is out for the season, which has basically ended the conversation around him being traded, which I think was a pretty hot name in Rays circles. And now that is no longer one of the options. And it now seems like it's kind of Hunter Goodman or bust in terms of catching improvement, not just for the Rays, but for kind of everybody out there. There's not a lot of great other catcher options. Unless
there's been quite a few. There have been quite a few links. The Rays have been scouting Ryan Jeffers of the Twins as well. So he's an option out there. And also just like, come on, guys, let's expect the Rays to, if we've said a name, the Rays are probably not going for him. They're probably going to get some guy that you've not even considered. That's what the Rays do best, is like, everyone goes, the Rays are in on this guy. We're not getting them. We're getting some guy you've never even considered. It might be a name, but like, I would be surprised if we get Goodman. I think the Yankees are going to they're going to back up the truck. They're going to back up the whole farm system and be like, please take three from column A and three from column B. They really want a catcher, and they've been in on Hunter Goodman. I think Cashman is known to be aggressive. And I think the Rays will get outbid, but I think Ryan Jeffers feels the most likely now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to see Fortes making the push that he has made over the past couple of weeks, and you know, really been out there doing his best to not be demoted from his spot as the starter, and be, you know, go to the backup role. So it'd be interesting to see if maybe he can find a way to keep that going and justify not making a trade. But I find that very unlikely. And so where catcher is a bit tricky. I think things now really turn towards second base, and then, you know, maybe somebody who could play second base or the outfield. You know, I think that the outfield is in a position now, like we said earlier, where I'm not really interested in another like 120 WRC plus type guy. Like, we've got those sorts of folks out there. If they wanted to make a blockbuster type move and bring in a real deal changer at that position, that would be something, but I don't think that's going to happen. However, there is a lot of smoke around second base, and the Rays currently are averaging the 7th worst WAR out of second base this season, and a bottom half of the league WRC plus out of second base this season. So just not, and it, you know, it's tough when you look and you know that we had a, you know, very, very good second baseman that we no longer have and are now in the bottom half of the league in production at second base. To me, that is the clear target to make a move.
Yeah, and there's a few different names you could go for. Curtis Meade was one of them. He's off the market now. Yeah. I think it would have been bad optics to get Curtis Meade, though. And then, yeah, we've talked about potentially trading for Brandon Lau back. He's a free agent at the end of the season. You've got other options. Ketel Marte is the kind of big fish, but he's pretty much made clear that he would probably invoke his no trade clause in any trade, basically. So keep an eye on that. Unless the Rays can convince him to move to the other side of the country, which is always a big ask. But you could also see other names that you might not have expected coming to the forefront as well. Luis Arraez is a common one. I actually want to call attention to a comment by BuckN0220, who says, kind of scares me if we just get Luis Arraez and nothing else, need some more power. Mm. It's an interesting one, that, because when you think about Luis Arraez, he suddenly figured out how to play defense, which is great. Love that. But he is very similar to every other profile the Rays have, which is don't strike out a lot, not much power, lots of singles, lots of balls in play. Do you think it's worth getting another piece that does what everyone else does, or do you think you should go for more a Brandon Lau type that's more power, less contact?
So I have been of the opinion personally that we have all the power we need in Junior Caminero, Yandy, and Aranda. However, if you do make a big move for Arias, you are basically precluding yourself from a big move, probably for more power. And here's the thing. The Rays are a middling team in slugging percentage. They're sitting at a 405 slug on the season, which is good for 13th best in baseball. But, and it depends on how much you care about this stat, I don't know, they're 25th in home runs at 105. So they are getting some doubles, and they are getting some, you know, some power, some extra base hits, but they're not getting a lot of home runs. So I think that's kind of where we were excited about the prospect of maybe a Shea Langeliers, because he could provide some of that. But now with him being hurt and it looking like Goodman is going to take, you know, an arm and a leg to get, and you may lose him to the Yankees no matter what you try to do. Going getting Arias would be sort of betting on the way that the Rays have been winning games so far, which is we're going to put the ball in play and hope that Junior, Yandy, and Aranda, and then maybe somebody else in the lineup can bring them in. And I think that, you know, while it is certainly a risk, and it's a, I'm with you being a little bit, there's a concern there. If you don't try to get more power and you just ride with what you've got from a power perspective, that there is a risk that you just don't have the power to bring the guys in. I trust the big three. And I think injecting Arias in there as an on-base guy would be a great accent to what we have right now. So I am on the Luis Arias train. You know, I don't think that we're getting Marte because I don't think he wants to leave for whatever reason. He just likes Arizona. Good for him. But I am all in on Arias. That's who I want. I will be disappointed. I'm at the point now, genuinely, I will be disappointed if the Rays do not get him.
Interesting. Okay. Do you think Arias being the only addition to the lineup would be fine?
Would it be fine? Yes. Is it my like ideal outcome? No. I would like an addition to the catching. Whether it is Jeffers, whether it is Goodman, I'd like something else there. But I will live with that. I cannot live with no additions. And I really don't want another like okay outfielder or another okay middle infielder. Like I need somebody that isn't like, whether it is, maybe it's not power, but it is a difference maker in one category. Arias is a difference maker in the on base category and the hits category and the balls in play category. And that's what, like, as much as I love a home run and I love some power, let's get some guys on base for the power guys that we do have to drive in. That's what I'm looking at it. That's how I'm looking at it. And then, you know, I do think, though, that there is a really good chance that the sort of the capital that the Rays have is going to shift from the offense to the defense, or not the defense, but the pitching side of things for this trade deadline with Longlers being out. I think now the focus is on getting a primo arm, whether it's Scooble, whether it's somebody else. I think that's now where the focus is going to start to become.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be Scooble, realistically?
Listen, there has been so much smoke with the Rays trying to make some kind of move to where, like, we always hear that the Rays are in on guys, but we have heard more smoke than usual. And Eric has been pretty blatantly saying that we're going to go for it this year. And so the reality is I don't know who has a better offer sheet, if they want to, then the Rays. Like, who out there can put together a better list? Like, certainly there are some teams that have top prospects, but most of them are not going to want to give out their top prospect. The Rays have the depth in the farm system to say, yeah, we're not giving you Theo Gillen. It's not going to happen. However, look at all these other guys that we have. We can give you a package of these other guys that are going to give you a lot of value. And I think at this point, with the offensive options being underwhelming at best, it is incumbent on the Rays to go all in on the pitching. If we're going to say that the Rays are truly going to try to go all in and not just pick around the corners like Pat, you just said they normally do, that's what they need to do. And to be honest, if we don't do something like that this offseason, I think I will never believe ever again that we're actually going to go for it. Because if not now, with the pitching, you know, option that is out there right now, with the farm system that we have, with the start that we've had to this season, with the core of this team that we have, if not now, where you're going to go for, where there's a clear target you could go get, if not now, when?
I couldn't agree more. I love that rallying cry that you've just given for the Rays to go get someone. I think Skubal, I actually would be surprised if we get Skubal. Mainly because Skubal seems kind of intent on finishing it up with Detroit, even though they seem to be not in a playoff spot right now. He kind of wants to run down his contract, which seems a bit bizarre to me. But yeah, and also, I don't know. He didn't do great in the playoffs for the Tigers last year, did he? So it's just a thing to watch out for. Does that matter? I don't know. Like, it was like two starts. Like, but it's one to watch. I think it's going to be high price and actually riskier than it maybe should be. But I could definitely see us going to get like a proper starting pitcher for sure. And I would be surprised if the Rays do their usual buy, sell, kind of reshuffle. I think they are going to go for it, but we'll have to see. Right. I think that's going to do it. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about.
The only thing that I really, there's only thing that I think really needs to be said left, and that is the bat and arm of the week. I do of think course. We need to do that
How can
before
I
we go. But I think we've said all we need to say. And we will give you a bat in the arm. But before we do that, if you have been enjoying the show, if you want to know when we go live again, drop a follow, drop a subscribe on whatever platform you're enjoying the show on. Helps us out a bunch. It's free. We are hoping to have you back next week when we talk trade deadline. It's going to be a trade deadline heavy show next week because it's going to be right there. I hope to be talking about some trades then. But we shall see. But for now, Pat, who is our arm of the week?
We've talked about him a lot this episode, but he was great. And that was Nick Martinez. Nick Martinez has been fantastic this week. He's been fantastic all year, really. But 12 innings, I think he only gave up like two runs, led the team in WAR, innings pitched, two excellent starts when we needed the most. So yeah, responsible for two of our five wins this week. So yeah, well done, Nick Martinez. Continued to be just excellent. The safest pair of hands on this team, I would say.
Yeah, you know, he's been overshadowed a little bit at times by Drew, and it's great to give him his due because I don't know where we would be without Nick Martinez, somebody that we really didn't have on our radar going into the offseason. As somebody who would be a part of this team and has come in and been just a massive part of it. Shout out to Eric and the boys for finding him, bringing him in, and to Nick Martinez for just being the steady Eddie. And really, and like steady Eddie feels a little bit like almost like a little insulting because he's just been really good. Like he's been steady, he's been consistent, but he's been consistently excellent. The dude is currently behind like only Cam Schlittler for the best ERA in the American League. Like he is for real.
That's a sneaky Cy Young case.
It's a sneaky Cy Young case. And we'll see how the rest of the season goes. He is hurt by the fact that he doesn't really strike guys out very much. And so his F4 is not going to be there. But when you think about the innings that he's pitched, he may not have the strikeout numbers. When we get to the end, you're going to look at innings pitched. You're going to look at his ERA. You're going to look at his FIP and you're going to say, maybe he doesn't deserve
it. And he doesn't walk anyone. He doesn't walk anyone.
He does a lot of things right for a pitcher. And so my hope is that if he continues this way, when we get to the end of the year, he's going to end up having a very strong case.
I hope so. He deserves it. He's been great. And unfortunately, we're probably not going to keep him for another year because he'll earn a lot of money in the free agent market if he keeps So yeah, shout out Nick Martinez. But who is our bat of the week?
Our bat of the week is coming from a position group that we have maligned frequently over the past couple of weeks as being not really pulling their weight. But he more than pulled his weight last week. It's Nick Fortes coming out here with a 416 WRC plus, two home runs, seven RBIs. He didn't strike out at all this week. He didn't walk all this week. It was just straight hands from him all week long, which I just found hilarious. Dude hit to a 1.133 slug. Crazy stuff out there from him. 0.6 F4 over the course of the week. He heard all the noise around Shea Longaliers, around Hunter Goodman, and he said, wait a minute, this is my starting catching gig. I'm not giving it up for nothing. And he went out there just straight hands all week long. Love to see it. Nick Fortes, bat of the week.
Yeah, he can. He's good. He's got a good hit tool. He's always had quite a good hit tool. Doesn't strike out a lot, but somehow he's managed to tap into a bit of juice as well. He's really started slugging the ball lately. But honestly, the thing you want out of your starting catcher more than anything is good game calling, good blocking. And he has both of those. Does he have a bit of a noodle arm when it comes to throwing guys out who are running? Yeah, maybe we could work on that if we were building the ideal catcher. But he's got a lot of the elements. And I think his offensive profile kind of plays into what the rest of the lineup wants to do really well. I've really enjoyed Nick Fortes since we've acquired him. I think he's been low-key, like, really solid. So, yeah, shout out. I'm glad he's getting his flowers. I'm glad he's had a top week. And, you know, if we end up having a Ryan Jeffers, Nick Fortes battery, I think that suddenly becomes like a top half catcher.
Yeah.
Also, a name I totally forgot about that we like have been tenuously linked to at the catching position was Adley Rutschman. You don't sound thrilled about that.
Well, so it's interesting. Like, Adley and Baker had a bro moment at the end of the All-Star game because they used to be teammates. And I believe it was Adley and Drew were teammates at Oklahoma State, I believe it was. And so they got to pitch with each other. And so there was a bro moment there. And so that was like, oh, are they going to trade him? And, like, there has been some, like, rumblings of would the Orioles trade Jackson Holliday? Would they move off some of their young core to try to salvage this group of guys and still get some success out of them? And I'm like, the only thing about it is I would be fine with trading for Adley. I just don't know what his value is weird right now, because he was considered by many to be, you know, the future of the catching position for Major League Baseball. And he really hasn't been that so far. It doesn't mean he couldn't find a way to turn it around and be that in the future. But I don't know if maybe, like, he's a weird guy to value is all I'm saying. And so I'm just not sure what it would take to get him. It would be interesting. I would not hate it if we got him. I just would be concerned about how much we'd have to give up, relatively speaking, to his current value.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got a weird defensive kind of history as well. It's, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But the bat's definitely there. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting how it all plays out. I think we've got a big, interesting week ahead of Rays baseball. The last thing I want to just say is really encouraging update on Manny Rodriguez.
Yes.
M-Rod is going to pitch today in single A. He's been playing for the FCL Rays. He's had a couple of outings there, and he's going to pitch with the single A. And apparently if he pitches a good inning there, they're going to send him to triple A next week. Mm-hmm. And then they're gonna give him probably about a month in AAA, where they're gonna really build him up, which means he could be on the team late August, which would be great news for the bullpen. So fingers crossed that's how it goes. So that's another sign, because I know this sounds really like Eric Neander, we've got bullpen at home. But it would be such a great addition that we wouldn't need to give up anything for.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when you think about adding, you know, potentially adding a starting pitcher, if you then think about the way that affects the rest of the guys who are around that starting pitcher that you've now added, where that could move guys back to the bullpen. And then you bring in a guy like Emron, who was so good for the Rays this last season. It would lock in an already pretty solid bullpen, and I think would put us in a situation where, you know, we feel like this pitching staff is excellent, and I think would put us over the top of being a real top pitching staff, bullpen and starting rotation combined with the addition of Emron and another starter.
Definitely. Also, Buck N0220, great comment here. Good point. Well made. With the FCL Rays are actually playing in the championship game today against the Astros.
Yes.
So good luck to the Florida Coast League Rays, who have been gas all season, by the way. And they're going to be playing in Port Charlotte today against the Astros, with a chance to win some MILB gold. I think the Rays could have a chance to get a lot of that this year as well.
They've been very good. Bowling Green's been good. Montgomery's been good. I mean, it's been a lot of really, like, there's just been, I say it every week, if the Rays have an off night and it's during the week, go find you a minor league game to watch, because these minor league teams are phenomenal. There's all kind of talent down there you can watch. It's just good stuff. Yeah, and, you know, we hope that the major league team will find a way to close out this series with the Guardians. They are currently tied 0-0 in the third inning. So we need Drew to keep it up. We need a little something from the offense, but feeling pretty good about our chances to close out this sweep.
Fingers crossed. Fingers, toes, eyes, all crossed. Yeah, and then we got a nice week ahead with the White Sox and Rangers at home. So let's keep the Trop a nice house of horrors for everyone and give us the best possible chance to be aggressive as possible going into the trade deadline.
And we hope that the next time that we speak to you all, we will be speaking with a new toy to play with, either on the hitting side or on the pitching side, or maybe both. But if we're here speaking to you, we've got that or we've got nothing, it's still going to be Raise Up.
Raise Up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.